The NFL owners' meeting is in the rearview mirror, and the Green Bay Packers are left considering their options in free agency. Will they sign Jared Cook? We'll find out with former Packers scout Mark Lillibridge. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about free agency. We're talking about the NFL draft. And to do those things, we have a guest joining us this morning.
Expert interview.
We have former Packers scout Mark Lillibridge, currently a broadcaster at 590 The Fan in St. Louis. Mark, how you doing this morning?
I am wonderful, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. Now, Mark, as a St. Louis media member, I want you to give me a scouting report on tight end Jared Cook. Of course, the Packers have brought him in for a visit. A lot of people wondering if the Packers will sign him. If they do, what kind of player will they be getting?
You know what? They're going to get a guy, and I hope it works out if that does happen for Green Bay and for Aaron Rodgers. I think that's part of where Jared Cooks has fallen off. This is a guy who has not topped 700 yards in any of his three seasons here with the St. Louis Rams. Of course, they're now the Los Angeles Rams. And it's a guy who, you look at him and you watch his movement skills, you see a freaky athlete. I mean, at times, he's almost like just a giant receiver because he can slot out. He's a great route runner. The guy he's a tough matchup for linebackers and a lot of safeties. What you get from him, though, is a lot of inconsistencies, and maybe part of that is due to some of the inconsistent quarterback play that the Rams have had in his 3 years here. But another part of it is just he'll flash one game where you'll say, holy cow, this guy will have 8-9 catches in a game, and you'll be like, all right, this is the Jared Cook they paid all this money to when they brought him over here as a free agent from the Tennessee Titans. And then another game, he'll disappear. He'll have two drops in a game. He'll miss a couple blocks. And he'll go, oh, here we go. Now he's regressing back into the tight end that we've seen too much of. So I think that was not only was his salary a reason for his release, but I think he never lived up to that big play tight end billing that everyone thought when he came over here with Jeff Fisher that he was going to become. So if there's a possibility, if anybody's going to bring it out of him, I think it's going to be Aaron Rodgers, because the one thing Aaron does well is he uses his tight ends in that offense. And Coach McCarthy understands how to employ those tight ends, get them into the offense and get his confidence up. I just don't know if you're going to get the tight end that's going to be – I don't think you're getting the tight end that's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver or a 1,200-yard receiver. But if he can give you 500 to 600 yards receiving – and be a two tight end. I wouldn't count on him to be your starter, but you can get him in there as a quality backup offensive weapon. I think he still is a viable option in offense in the NFL.
Yeah, people in Green Bay want to point out that Cook has never worked with a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers before. Do you think that's what held him back in St. Louis, the fact that he never really worked with a top-tier quarterback in the NFL?
I think that's part of it. I definitely think that plays into it. I mean, I think some of it's got to be on Jared Cook as well, because this is a guy, when he came out of South Carolina, was an elite tight end. I mean, you don't get drafted in the third round if you're not considered to be a viable option as a starting player at some point in your career. And he came out like gangbusters early in his career. When he was in Tennessee, they paid him all this money, gave him a huge contract to of course, bring him over here. And everybody was excited. Even the St. Louis media, everyone was kind of looked the other way with the contract that he was given, because they thought, all right, well, he's going to come in here and help this offense understand Jeff Fisher, what Jeff Fisher wants to do as far as being a coach, but what he wants to do in his offense. And that never materialized. He just never, ever really lived up to that billing. I'm not going to sit and say he's not a great leader, but he's not one of those rah-rah guys that a lot of players are going to follow. And so I think that became part of the perplexity of it, is that he never really ever lived up to the hype or the billing, in not only in the locker room, but also just on the field, that everyone thought he was going to come over here with Jeff Fisher and from the Tennessee Titans. So I think that was maybe he had too much on his shoulders. You can put part of it on the fact he never really had a great quarterback, but some of it was on him too, because there was time that they really tried to build this offense around him, and he would have drop balls, or he'd run wrong routes, or he'd have a bust in the game, and you would just say, okay, at some point it's got to click. And he teased you enough where you said, holy cow, this guy could be a star, and then he'd disappear again. And that's where I think it ultimately had to move on from him.
I'm curious, Mark. It seems as if in free agency, if a player makes a visit to a team, it seems to me that most time the deals get done before a guy leaves town. Now, the visit that Cook made to Green Bay was like a week and a half ago, and there's been no action, and it's kind of weird to me. Like, Jared Cook might be the best free agent still on the market in the entire NFL. Do you think he wants a deal that's maybe, you know, closer to what he got last time? Does he want a lot of money? What do you think is happening there?
Well, I think part of it is he turns 30 next month, April 7th, he turns 30 years old. I think this is a guy who understands he needs to snatch up the market as much money as he possibly can, because once you get over that 30 mark in the NFL, you're always considered, no matter how good you are, even if you're Tom Brady, you're still considered on the downside of your career. So I think this is a guy who's trying to get optimal money, and I don't know if the Packers are there. Ted Thompson has always been one of those guys who is frugal when it comes to spending on not only free agents, but on players outside the organization. He's done a phenomenal job of drafting well and paying his own when it comes to going out and getting guys. I mean, you can look at the success of Julius Peppers and Charles Woodson, and even to some degree Ryan Pickett, but Ted's not that guy. And the one thing that I think it was interesting to me, even when I heard about this visit, I said, well, that's an interesting reason for or a player for Ted to look at, because they are looking for a tight end and, mm-hmm. and kind of have been, especially with Corliss not coming back, or at least it looks like he's not going to come back. And it comes down to that since Jared Cook doesn't play into the compensation, the compensatory picks in free agency, it makes it a good signing. And so I just think this is one of those deals where I just don't know if Jared's getting a lot of other looks from other teams. I think because of maybe that reputation he has as kind of being a little bit of a tease. And so I think it's probably you're trying to find a happy medium. How much are we willing to pay for a guy that has a chance to break out? And then how much is he willing to accept? So it's going to probably take a little bit of Jared's ego to say, okay, I want to just go somewhere, maybe sign a 2-year deal and prove myself and show if I have a good quarterback and a good offense, I can be a Pro Bowl talent.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to former Packers scout Mark Lillibridge, currently of 590 The Fan in St. Louis, here on a Friday morning. Mark, if the Packers don't get a tight end in free agency, what do you think of the tight ends in this year's draft class?
Yeah, this is one of the weaker draft class tight ends I've seen in a long time. This class is... it's tough. You have Hunter Henry, the tight end from Arkansas, who I think stands out. I think he is – it's not really even close when it comes to who's the top tight end in this class. He is – he can do everything. He's not a great inside or inline blocker, but he's good enough. But he's got phenomenal hands. He's a great route runner, and he's tough as nails. So I think that's a guy that he would probably be the only tight end you would consider in the first round. Now, will the Packers do that? I think they have other needs, but that would be a guy that if they're going to take a tight end in the first round, Hunter Henry's the standout, and he's really the only one that you would probably even consider. Now, you have another group of tight ends. There's Nick Vanette from Ohio State, who's probably more of a third to fourth round tight end. I like him. I thought he did a really nice job at the Senior Bowl. I thought he stood out down there. It wasn't a great group, so you're sitting there. you know, is this how high are you willing to go when it comes to tight end? This is going to be one of those classes where I think you can probably find a value tight end in the fourth or fifth rounds. I'm not sure that I would jump and get one in the first round. I think you can maybe hope that Hunter Henry will slide to the top of the second after Green Bay to get him. They'd have to move up and or move back, one of the two, if that's where they decided to go, if they could feel like they could turn that into some multiple picks. But Austin Hooper's came out early from Stanford. He's more of an H-back type player. I think he's a phenomenal route runner. He comes from a pro-style offense, of course, with head coach David Shaw out there in Stanford. So I think that's a guy that you would look to. But the one that I think is a good fit for Green Bay and for their offense and what they're trying to do is a guy named Jarrell Adams, another South Carolina tight end. He's 6'5", 245-pound tight end, but he runs in the 4.6s. And he's one of those guys that I think he looks the part. He's so talented. He needs to get a little bit stronger as an inline blocker and really work on his angles when it comes to blocking. But you talk about a guy who is explosive off the ball, who is explosive out of his breaks on his routes, and who's got the ability to smash the ball out of the air and really, I think, be a difference maker in an offense. He would be a guy that I think Aaron Rodgers would absolutely go nuts having because he could have a young talent that he could really stretch the field with. I mean, this guy is more or less a younger version of Jared Cooks, and I think it's ironic they come from the same school. He reminds me very much of Jared Cook.
Yeah, that's interesting that the Packers could pass on Cook in free agency and still get a younger version of himself in the NFL draft. That would be quite interesting. Mark, another position the Packers need help is linebacker. And as a former linebacker yourself, what do you think of the inside linebacker class in this year's draft?
You know, it's interesting because I think if you just strictly look at inside linebackers and you were just to say what I think historically everyone says, okay, this is what an inside linebacker is in a 3-4. This is what inside linebacker is in a 4-3. This is where this guy fits. You know, I know that the Packers really want to start to get Clay Matthews back outside. And I think they're happy with Jake Ryan. I think that was a nice pick to be able to get him in the fourth round. I think he did well, especially later on in the season. You know, I think if you're going to – they're going to stay in that 3-4, they probably want a thumper guy that's going to fit in the middle. And a guy that would be a great fit is Reggie Ragland from Alabama. I mean, he is the prototypical inside 3-4 guy. I mean, he's going to hit you. He's so tough. He's super smart. He's not great in coverage. He's not going to be one of those guys you're going to sit and say, okay, if you watch the playoff game last year, Seattle versus Carolina – you see Luke Kuechly covering receivers, cover Doug Baldwin on an outside on an out route and knock the ball down. Reggie Ragland's not going to be able to give you that athleticism. But when it comes to filling tackle and hitting running backs in the hole and being a force on the inside, Reggie Ragland is that tight end. Is that linebacker from Alabama. He'd be phenomenal. After that, then I think you're really – it kind of falls off as far as tackling machine inside linebacker. You got a guy that's down here in our neck of the woods, Kentrell Brothers from Mizzou. He's a smaller guy, just a little bit over 6 foot tall, 245 pounds. And he's a good tackler, but he's more of a sideline-to-sideline guy. And again, very limited athletically. Dominic Alexander from Oklahoma, same kind of situation. You know, there's Tyler Mekkavich from Temple. Those are all the same kind of guys. They're not really – none of them are real athletic type guys. Mm-hmm. And they're more, again, the run-stuffing tight end – or run-stuffing linebackers, geez. But then when you say – if you look at the other outside linebackers or what they consider outside linebackers or what I think would fit in this, you got guys like Miles Jack from UCLA who I think is the best athlete in this draft. I think he is head and shoulders above anyone else. I mean, even Jalen Ramsey, the safety slash corner from Florida State, Miles Jack is as good of an athlete, baby, and I still think better. So he'd be a phenomenal, and he won't be there when the Packers pick in the first round. But you can get other guys, Darren Lee from Ohio State. If Jalen Smith ends up being healthy from Notre Dame, I mean, that's a guy that I think somebody's going to get a steal on. I don't know if he plays in the 2016 season, but I think if there's no nerve damage in his knee, I think he's a guy that fits in phenomenal in somebody's defense in 2017. And it was still that caveat that if there's nothing wrong with the knee, he still could play in 16. So, you know, you got Josh Perry again from Ohio State. There's Kyle Fracknell from Utah State. Deion Jones, the guy that I think is good from LSU, who's like a big safety. And he kind of reminds me of Mark Barron, who just signed a five-year, $45 million contract with the Los Angeles Rams, former safety, kind of safety body who plays inside linebacker. And Deion Jones reminds me of him a lot. So there's some names out there, and I think it's unless you get Miles Jack in the first round or you get Reggie Ragland in the first round, I think then you have some little quality names that you can probably get, you know, where the Packers pick in the second, third rounds. I think they can get some quality name guys that are still productive players.
Earlier this week, Mark, in Green Bay, Elliot Wolf received a promotion. Director of Football Operations, I think, is his new title. And I know your time in Green Bay didn't overlap for long, but I'm just curious, you know, what was your impressions of Elliot Wolf now that he's gotten a promotion?
He's phenomenal. He was actually an intern when I was hired up there. And of course, I was his dad's last official hire. So it's I'm tied to Elliot for history. And I think he's so smart. He's so well prepared. This is a kid that's been doing it his entire life. And then, you know, it's one of those things where people will get upset and say, oh, well, nepotism is this. And, you know, he only got the job because of his dad. And not Elliot Wolf. Elliot Wolf got this job because he grinds and he works his tail off. And you know, when it's time from, you know, going to school at the University of Miami, I mean, he was working in that front, in their football offices, you know, breaking down tape. Him and I used to play a game where we would sit and call each other or email each other players, and then you'd have to, historically players, and we'd have to name what college that they went to. And I don't know if he's ever gotten one wrong. I mean, this kid can, you can go back 50, 60 years and name a player, and he'll tell you what college the guy went to. So, I mean, his in-depth historical knowledge of players and schemes and understanding the game is tremendous. And, you know, he's a GM in waiting. I think that's kind of the everyone out in the NFL thinks, all right, this guy's going to take over Pat Thompson when he leaves. And you know, but he's got some company up there. I mean, Brian Gutekunst, also, who I worked with, who got promoted to director of player personnel, he's another great football mind and could run a team. And so I think that Ted Thompson has built a great group of scouts that they don't have a lot of turnover. I mean, Lee Gistner, of course, left to become a national scout with the Jets, and Lenny McGill a couple of years ago left to go to Denver. But besides that, you know, the only way guys leave is that they go to become a general manager. And so, Ted really has done a great job of promoting those guys and helping those guys grow as scouts. And it's kind of fun to watch because it's you see good guys that understand the game and want to win and do things the right way, you know, they should get promoted. And so I was excited for Elliot, excited for Brian, and the Green Bay Packers fans should know that their future and the future of the franchise is in great hands.
Last question before we let you go here, Mark, kind of the same question on Ted Thompson. I mean, what do you think of the job he's doing? He gets a lot of criticism for his, you know, averseness to free agency, I guess, here in Wisconsin. What do you think of the job he does and the approach he takes to football?
Well, I think part of the natives are getting restless just because you want to be able to finish games better. You shouldn't have to wait for two Hail Marys to win some games. you would really like this team to take off again. But that's not, I don't think it comes down to the quality of the players on the field. I mean, that just comes down to the players executing, you know, the offense and defense that are called. And I think he's done a phenomenal job. He drafted two great corners last year, I think, who are going to continue to blossom and continue to grow. He's done a good job of re-signing his own players and keeping them in-house. It'll be interesting for me what happens with the loss of B.J. Rajic. I know that was an unexpected hiatus that he decided to take. But Ted Thompson does something that I think a lot of teams wish they could do but haven't been able to, is build it from the ground up, build it from the inside out, and to be able to just really – he loves collecting draft picks. He grinds. He's on the road. He's one of those he's a true scout – in essence, where he's at almost every pro day, he's at every all-star game, and he thrives because he loves being around football guys and finding football players. And I think that has shown itself historically that he's built a great roster. I mean, he's a Super Bowl winning GM, and he's got a quarterback that is a franchise quarterback, a guy who's a legend in Green Bay already and who's still young enough. It's just a matter of keeping the guys healthy and continually to to add pieces to around Aaron Rodgers that you continue to grow and get better. And I think this team is one of those teams that you're always going to compete. I mean, came out of the box, 6-0 last year, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, so some of that is on the players, some of that's coaching, some of that is front office. But at the same point, I think there's enough good players there where you say, okay, he's done a great job. And so would you like Nick Perry to have been had a better career? Sure. Of course you would have, you know, you would like to have gotten a little bit more out of Mike Neal. But I mean, at the same point, he's still the same guy that took Aaron Rodgers. So you always got to give him credit for that. He took Jordy Nelson. I mean, Randall Cobb. I mean, you look down that list. I mean, there's some good football players that he's drafted and brought in there. Mm-hmm. I think this team's going to be all right.
Mark, thank you so much for your insight. It's great to get your thoughts on Green Bay. Very much appreciate it. Keep up the good work there in St. Louis, and we'll do it again sometime.
Well, it's still my son was born in Green Bay, so he's a huge Packer fan. So he's fired up. When I told him I was doing this, he was all excited. So he told me to tell all the fans to go Packers, and hopefully, we don't have a team here, so I can root for whatever I want now. And so my time in Green Bay was phenomenal, and I will always be a Packer fan. So I hope that they can push this over the edge and get to a Super Bowl, because you know the fans of Green Bay are some of the best in the NFL, and they deserve it.
We hope Rams fans or St. Louis fans adopt the Packers. So thanks so much, right. Mark. Take care.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Former Packers scout Mark Lillibridge joining us here at Railbird Central on a Friday morning. Thanks to him for joining us. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as well as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
News since our last episode of Railbird Central on Wednesday. A lot of the news coming out of the NFL owners' meetings, the last day of which was on Wednesday. We talked about several of the rule changes that had happened up to that point. The new kickoff rule, the elimination of the chop block. Those were some of the more notable ones. We talked about those on our last episode, actually. But one new rule that I think is pretty interesting is the new injured reserve designation rule. Of course, this has been a rule that's been part of the game since, I believe, 2012. The NFL made it so you can have one player and one player only come off injured reserve. You know, it's not like baseball where they go on the disabled list and come back. And I think some people kind of wish it was that way. But at least the NFL has made progress. It used to be if you put a player on injured reserve, he was done. At least you get one now. And in seasons past, you had to designate that player. When you put him on injured reserve, he was the one and only guy who could come back. Now it's made retroactively, so you don't have to designate that person right away, which was tough, I mean, because right when these players are injured, it's like you've got to make this decision on them, you know, just days after they're injured, and it really kind of puts you in a bind, I think, or it has put the Packers in the bind in the past. Just this past season, Andrew Corliss, you know, he was the guy the Packers choose. He suffers an injury week 3 of the season, and they got to make that decision on him right away, and they don't really have that opportunity to, you know, at the time, you didn't really know how long his recovery would take. And he never really did become the same player again after he tore the MCL in his knee. As you remember, he made a comeback and he played in like 3 games late in the year. I mean, we're talking week 16, week 17 of the season. And then the Packers, you know, put him on injured reserve for good in the playoffs nonetheless. When he just suffered a setback and never was the same player. Meanwhile, Jordy Nelson, late in the season, he actually says, well, if we made the Super Bowl, it's possible I could have come back. I mean, you know, if that was the case, I mean, it'd be interesting to think, had the Packers just won one or two more playoff games, Could they have, you know, that person have been Jordy Nelson instead and come back and play in the Super Bowl? I don't know whether they would have had the, you know, the cojones to actually do that, to take a guy who hasn't played all year and bring him back for one game for the Super Bowl. Because if that doesn't work out, you're going to get a lot of criticism for that. Or if Jordy Nelson just wasn't the same player, didn't have enough speed yet. But, I mean, if we go back further, though, I mean, if you remember, I think it was 2012, the Packers placed Cedric Benson, running back. He was their designee, you know, to come off injured reserve. He had a injured Lisfranc bone in his knee, or pardon me, his foot. And, you know, he never ended up coming off injured reserve. The Packers eventually decided it's just he wasn't recovered and never did end up playing again. And so, I mean, I think that's why this can help, is this retroactive kind of designation where you don't have to, you know, choose that player right away. You got some time to think about it. So it's an interesting rule that I think is a good one and a step in the right direction for the NFL, in addition to several other rule changes they made at the NFL owners meeting. Other news coming out of there, I know Packers president Mark Murphy commented on the team being opposed to traveling to China for a regular season football game that apparently is going to happen in 2018. The NFL is going to play a regular season game in China, obviously, as they try to expand their interest beyond the borders, and China being, you know, billions of people that live in China, and they're trying to tap the market there. And apparently the Los Angeles Rams, talking a lot about the Rams today, they're the team that has agreed, apparently, to give up a home game to play in China. And what's interesting is that's the, just so happens, the schedule works out that the Packers in 2018 play a road game at the Rams, as they, you know, that's the year the NFC North plays the NFC West. So they got to play every member of the NFC West that year. And, you know, the Packers, though, you know, not really keen on that idea. They don't want to be the team, that one of eight teams to travel to China for a regular season football game. Mark Murphy and you know, reports made to several outlets, including the Green Bay Press Gazette, which is, I think, where I read it first. Also talked about still being open to London. The Packers would be fine with playing a road game in London, assuming it's, you know, they don't have to give up the home game to do so. The stance hasn't changed. I mean, it's been this way for the Packers for years. They don't mind playing internationally if it's a road game, except China. I guess they think that's a little bit too far away, too many time zones away. London, they're all right with. Again, you know, they don't want to give up the home game, give up a sold-out stadium crowd, all the money that comes with concessions and parking and tickets and et cetera, et cetera. They don't want to give that up and don't want the city of Green Bay to give that up either, seeing as there's only 10 of those games a year in Green Bay, and that's a big moneymaker for the entire city, basically the local economy based around Packers games. So interesting. I don't know how much, you know, choice the Packers have in the matter in terms of, you know, if the Rams are going to China, one of eight teams has got to go with them. I don't know whether, you know, the NFL probably talks about it with the individual teams and tries to see if there's one that's willing. And that way, you know, the Packers don't have to, you know, that they don't have to, essentially. I don't know. It's interesting. Obviously, we're talking far down the road here, but it was a topic that came up this past week anyway. Other Packers news, the Wisconsin Badgers are actually going to be practicing at Packers facilities. I believe it's Saturday, April 2nd. So in the near future here, that's going to be happening. The Badgers, of course, play their season opener this upcoming year against LSU at a neutral site at Lambeau Field in Green Bay. So they kind of give giving the college football players a little bit of a lay of the land. They'll be doing they'll actually be practicing inside the Don Hutson Center. After all, it is early April in Green Bay, and there's no guarantee it's going to be nice outside to practice. They changed the sod at Lambeau Field anyway, so it's not as if they could practice in the stadium. But they're going to do a stadium tour, though, and give them the lay of the land ahead of their season opening game. Just kind of interesting that happened. All sorts of little Packers tidbits coming out in the past several days. But as far as on the future schedule,
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers this Friday, I mean, it's Good Friday, and thus there's not going to be a whole lot of NFL news coming out this week, this weekend, presumably, because of the holiday, the religious holiday that many people observe. But the one small connection to the Green Bay Packers this weekend, a movie is coming out today, first day of its release, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. And a former Green Bay Packers player, and a quite notable one, had a role in the film. Amon Green, the Green Bay Packers' all-time leading rusher in franchise history. He apparently, as the story goes, had a role basically as an extra in the movie, a very small role in which he appears on screen for a couple seconds. Apparently, his role is titled Thug Number Two. But it's cool. If I had the chance to be an extra in a Hollywood blockbuster, I'd probably take him up on it too, even if it's not a leading role or anything like that. As the story goes, apparently Amon Green's role, his scene has been cut from the version of the movie that's going to happen in theaters, but it's still going to be in the director's cut version when it comes out on DVD. So kind of interesting. Apparently he still appears in the credits. So if you go to the movie this weekend, go to it today, you'll see Amon Green in the credits, apparently. So there's your small Packers connection on what otherwise should be, not a whole lot of breaking news, over this, religious holiday weekend here. There's tons of pro days across the NFL during the month of March. They kind of slow to a crawl today, only one this Friday taking place at BYU, Brigham Young, appropriately, I suppose, where Easter is recognized but not really celebrated in the Mormon church quite as much as it is in Christian ones. So that's the only pro day taking place this Friday. But there's your news in the day ahead of the Green Bay Packers. We'll be back again for another episode on Monday. New episodes of Railbird Central every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time. That's the live show, podcasted on demand later in the day. My call to action, as always, as usual, if you've not done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. If you could do us a solid, give us a review and a rating, we'd greatly appreciate it. Just go to iTunes, search Cheesehead TV, it'll pop right up. We'd thank you for doing that, and thank you to all of those who have done it already. A lot of you have, and we appreciate it. We'll see you later, folks. Have a good weekend. Have a happy Easter, and we'll see you on Monday. I leave you today with a song called, if I can find it here, Sirens by String Cheese Incident on Sci Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.